She hates my mama, she hates my daddy too. She loves to tell me she hates the things I do. She loves to lie beside me almost every night. Well, she's no lady, she's my wife. The preacher asked her and she said I do. The preacher asked me and she said, yes, he does too. The preacher said, I pronounce you 99 to life. Son, she's no lady, she's your wife.
Ah, yes, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Speaking with Carl Thornton Jr. As we have Mr. Lyle Lovett, courtesy of the great and brilliant Dr. Lisa Firestone, helping to get us in the mood.
However, thought that I just couldn't live without a woman's charm. And even though she loves the smell of French perfume, and even though she walks around in high-heeled shoes, well, all I know is I'm the one who pays her price. Man, she's no lady, she's my wife.
I tell you, Dr. Firestone, Lyle has really got me in the mood for love.
Okay. Or afraid of it. One or the
other. Right. I mean, all I need to do when I'm ready to have a nice romantic dinner with my wife is listen to Lyle Lovett first.
Yes. Well, you know, it's one thing when we're in that loving mood, but, you know, the reality is a lot of times we substitute a fantasy of love for real love, and that's when we, you know, the relationship starts to deteriorate and sound more like what Lyle's singing about.
And ladies and gentlemen, we're going to talk about that some more a little bit later. I tell you what, I guess there's nothing much worse than a terribly burnt turkey than a terribly burnt marriage. Well, Dr. Lisa Firestone is joining us again. She is a brilliant lady, outstanding psychologist, who really helps us get a firm handle on what relationship is about. She is joining me today to talk about fantasy bond. But before we get to fantasy bond, Dr. Firestone, it is, as always, a great pleasure and honor to have you with us. How have you been?
I have been good. I have been good, Carl. Thanks so much. I always love being on your show.
I appreciate you. And I tell you what, you really do an outstanding job of helping us understand what relationships are about, what makes them work, when it may be time to say goodbye. But before we go into relationships, for the benefit of people who have never been able to catch any of our previous conversations, would you tell the Speaking With community more about Dr. Firestone? What made you tick as a child growing up? What began to shape you to the point where you finally decided that you would go into psychology, and how you decided what area of psychology you'd specialize in?
Yeah, well, I as a child, I was always interested in people and how they worked. And my father was a psychologist. I used to listen to his early conversations with colleagues when I was pretty young. I'd sit and be interested. And I remember in fifth grade, they had us write a paper of what we thought love was, and I wrote a very psychological explanation from overhearing these conversations, and my teacher called my parents to say, why did you write her paper for her? So it was, so I was interested in the subject from early on, and I think I had the very unique good fortune of having a father who really is a person who does know how to love, and you know, really has been a guiding light in that area for so many people, myself included. And it really inspired me to want to go into the field of psychology and help people, and help people who maybe, you know, have grown up with, you know, different ideas about what love is, because a lot of things get substituted for love that aren't really love, and then it makes it hard later on to develop good, healthy relationships. And that's a lot of what I do as a psychologist now. And it also led to us developing a website called Psych Alive, which just has a lot of good psychological information for the general public on it. Information about relationships, but also about getting to know yourself and also about being a good parent. And being involved with those two things has been has really been a meaningful part of my life.
That is so interesting, and particularly when you mentioned getting to know yourself. Do you find that most people that you talk with do know themselves fairly well? Do most people seem to know themselves very well? Do most people seem to know themselves very little? Do most people seem to know themselves not at all?
Yeah, it's really on a continuum. And when people come to me, obviously they're struggling probably with some aspect of knowing themselves. But I think that what we get to know often is a definition of us that was kind of handed to us in our family. You know, the smart one, the good-looking one, or the ugly one, or whatever it might have been. And we sort of have this definition of what it is we can do and what we can't do, or what we should be doing. But I think that it isn't very often that people really know what is really meaningful to them. And yet, what studies of happiness will show you is that what gives us happiness much more than seeking immediate pleasure is really seeking meaning in our lives. But it has to be some meaning that resonates with us, you know? And that could be very different things for different people. You know, so knowing ourselves on that level, what our own unique self is, I think people often don't have a very good idea. They think they're what they told they were or what they were supposed to be, or maybe that, you know, this family thinks this way, so this is the way I am. But, you know, the reality is we're all our own unique person, and, you know, that is a really important thing for people to find, for them to then have meaning in their lives. And it's not a selfish endeavor either, because everybody in our life benefits when we're more ourselves. So, we're much better to the people around us if we take the time to get to know ourselves.
Interesting. So getting to know ourselves, discovering something that has meaning for us, does this have to do with jobs? Does it have to do with careers? Does it have to do with hobbies? Does it have to do with learning our personality traits?
It has to do with learning the things that really light us up, that really matter to us. You know, like, so for me, part of that is wanting to help other people and offering, you know, love and assistance to all those people closest to me as well. Those are things that light me up, and I think it can be very different things for different people. It can be career, but it's often not solely career, because our personal side of our life really matters, the relationships we form, the kind of people we decide to have in our life, you know, the kind of person we model being for our children. All of those things are really important. So it's, you know, it's what lights you up. When do you feel the most yourself? When you're doing what? Or when you're engaged in, you know, what kinds of behavior, or, you know, when you're around which people, those will give you clues as to what is really different about you. And, you know, career can be part of it, but, you know, it's not just that there's one career out there, and if we're not doing that, we're not going to be happy. It's kind of how we do our career, whatever the career is, that matters whether we're going to be happy, you know, whether we really invest in it and, you know, try to do a good job at whatever it is and, you know, try to contribute however we can. It's all those things that make us feel good. I mean, one thing about, you know, about meaning and about, you know, things that matter to us is it's something that's inside of us coming out. It's not a matter of what we're getting from the outside. And it's those things that really matter.
Gotcha. Okay. So we're looking at the proper way to go about finding meaning in our lives. How about when it comes to, because this is something that I just find fascinating, and you're really taking us into this already, psychology. What is psychology essentially about?
Well, you know, psychology is the study of human beings, of all of us, you know, how we think, how we feel, how we behave in our lives. And there's lots of different areas of psychology. As a clinical psychologist, meaning that I work with people directly on trying to be helpful to them in various ways, it's really about, to me, about exploring the person. And, you know, a lot of what happens to people that's hurtful to them in their lives happens in a relationship context, you know, in our early lives. You know, as human beings, we're born incredibly adaptive, and we adapt to whatever social environment we're born into. And originally, that's our family, right, or whoever our caretakers are early on.
Right.
So it's not just biological family. It's whoever is going to really be with us in our early days, because they're really helping us wire our brain and lay down those neural networks. You know, those people who parent us, even if they're not our biological parents, actually are our parents. They shape who we are. And those early experiences shape who we are and how we think about the world and how we even perceive the world. And, you know, so an important part of psychology is, you know, the things that happen to us that hurt us early on, are in a relationship context, and they're best fixed in a relationship context, in the relationship with another human being who is able to show that they care and about you, that they're attuned to you, that they're paying attention, that they want to know you. And as people, we like to tell stories. We like to tell our story. It's very helpful to us to make sense of our early story. Even if it was painful, making sense of it turns out to really help to repair a lot of even very painful things that may have happened to us.
And I notice you've mentioned pain and hurtful things. Do the hurtful things tend to impact us more significantly than the more pleasant moments and experiences of our lives?
Yes, they do in some way, and that's really unfortunate, you know, as a parent, and I know you're a parent too, and to all those parents out there, I know we would like our children to remember all the happy, good things and all the wonderful times we had with them, and the times that we were at our best and most loving.
Yes, indeed.
And they do. Those things do nurture them. And believe me, they're important. And those get naturally assimilated into their personality, and that's wonderful. But you know, the negative things, especially things that feel scary or feel life-threatening, which a lot of things look that way from the point of view of a small child, that don't to an adult. Like, you walk out of the room to go get your baby a bottle, and you're, you know, with the best of intention wanting to feed them, right, and meet their need as quickly as possible. They may feel completely abandoned and scared because they're hungry and crying and you're walking away, you know. And, you know, so a lot of things can seem scary or negative to a baby because they're, you know, afraid. And because we're trying to survive, we pay more attention to the things that seem scary or life-threatening. That's just the way we're built. And it's so that we can adapt, you know, and try to avoid those things in the future. But unfortunately, that leaves us with a stronger memory trace for those very painful things. You know, remembering something hurtful that a friend said or a painful experience stays with us longer than that very nice, friendly exchange we had with them, unfortunately.
And a lot of that you were sharing with us just a little earlier has to do with the way our brains are functioning as far as those neural paths go.
Right. Those early neural pathways are laid down, and we're trying to remember the scary things because we don't want them to happen again. But unfortunately, that, you know, those things do leave their mark. You know, the positives do, too. And, you know, the overall balance of having, it's not that parents have to be perfect, by the way. It's getting it right about 30% of the time is a good enough parent.
Okay.
So,
that's,
you know, we're not trying to say you have to be perfect. But, you know, that you can attune to the baby and learn your baby and meet their needs. And, you know, it turns out the more you meet your baby's needs in the first year, the less they're going to cry later on. You can't spoil them that first year. They need a lot of attention, you know, and partly because they're so completely helpless, you know. I mean, human beings stay helpless for longer than, I think, any other creature, you know.
Yes. I tell you, that is so interesting that, you know, you're looking at the way we do things. And let's say by the time the child is 4 years old, 6 years old, we're really, really seeing the personality. And we may be thinking that when a child acts the way they act, or let's say they're 12 years old, they're acting the way they act, and we don't really like it, we're assuming it's all about attitude, and mm-hmm. it may be more about brain than just disposition.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it's both. You know, I mean, we used to think, is it nature, is it nurture, you know?
Yeah.
And anybody who has more than one child knows they don't come out a blank slate. They have different personalities, right?
That's right.
And, you know, some babies are easier to soothe than others, and all of that is true. But it's really a nature-nurture interaction. We now know from the budding field of something called epigenetics, which is how our experience affects our genes and how they get expressed, that it's both, and it's always an interaction for almost any behavior we're seeing.
That is awesome. Ladies and gentlemen, our guest, Dr. Lisa Firestone, and I will be right back. We're talking relations, and we're going to be moving into a discussion of something that she and her father talk about. It has been opening minds and eyes everywhere. Fantasy Bond. Stay with us. We'll be right back. She's no lady. She's mine. You know, I think I have heard that song. For some reason, she's no lady, she's my wife. That refrain sounds so familiar to me.
Mm-hmm.